20 letters from the goal. When we don't have a meeting, we have to think of the because of the number of departments, the social community, unlike it. We are going to write a committee and we have to think of our concerns. We have expected the activities, the because the department is politically led. We are politicians. If we want to engage with the constituents, there will be issues that we pick up from our constituency that will require the attention of our colleagues in the department who are politicians. That is the reason why. It's not because of the party or what, but it's because of the reason that as we represent the community, there will be issues that affect our property that we represent that we have to bring to the counterpart of the department, the minister or the deputy. So for that, for us just wanted to explain that for us to be able to make this meeting, having explained that you are going to write a letter in our office. So let me welcome you, John. We are a very huge department, a department of business, much very big. We would like to engage all of you, but it's only for so we really take all the information that we take from the commission, responsible for the various directors in the department, to give us accurate information so that when we conduct oversight, we are able to compare what we say and what we take. The purpose of the meeting, I'm not going to introduce the members because it is before. Maybe before we proceed also, let us express our concern as the select committee for not having been informed about the departure of Mr. Patel. As a select committee, we never know. I just heard on Monday that there is a moral service in this. Which one or two members could have attended on behalf of the mm-hmm. And we were not informed. We really are very concerned about the inability of the department to communicate information. We felt very bad. We've been working with him for the last four years, maybe 6 years. Mm-hmm. So we should have been in touch. Nonetheless, we want to express on behalf of the community the and all the friends and the friends in the department want to say that it's so difficult. That it's only the rest of us. Let us proceed to the agenda of the day. I've read the appointment of the constitution and the education. Whether we have people on this family list, I can hear maybe other people are going to do it. The purpose of all the engagement today, honourable members, is to look at a couple of issues. One, it is the state of registration in universities and TVET colleges. I would request that you start with that one. We shift that one to the top, and the following one will be the artist convention. We'll get done with DHEPS and then we'll look at the issues pertaining to this one. We are going to be allocating minutes, given the fact that we've got a couple of presentations. Allowances that are given to the students, that the department needs to look into. As we conduct oversight, we find that universities, there are inconsistencies. The amounts that are given to students differ from place to place. I don't know whether it's what it is, but the charges of different universities are not represented. We see clarity in that regard as well. Also, the issue of academic and technical requirements of all courses that are offered to the university, issues like this, and how the funding is going to be dispersed as we progress over the 5-year period, and the allocation specifically for 2018-2019 financial year, how many students been registered, and how are we moving also in terms of registration access, when, where we compare ourselves to the schools of the embassy. Our increases, our safety, is the funding allowing us to reach the policies of the NCP in the registration in the of the old and university and I will then give the university to come in to
thank you so much, President, and honorable members. Thank you for having us. My name is Tandy. I don't think you're here before.
What's your name?
Tandy.
Beautiful name.
Thank you so much.
Beautiful name.
Oh, yeah, the same. Okay. So my parents gave me the name in 1973. I'm not managing to get connected to prison, but I think our colleague is going to check if we can get it. But you have to say that.
Yeah,
I think you've got to say the technical stuff.
Oh, fine.
Thank you so much. I'm the chief director for university governance and management support. I just started the job, but previous to that, I was working on the national plan for change. And I've been in the department before. So I'm going to talk to the rest. So the registration reports of the universities are within my responsibility. We are responsible for the governance of the universities and oversight of that process, as well as the oversight of issues that are relating to registration. We are responsible for the fitness track as well. So many of those issues fall within my remit. So I'm just going to give a brief background on the preparation for 2018. I know the select committee was briefed on issues over the past 2 years in relation to registration where there's been trouble, especially around the season of fall issues. So I'm just going to take off from the end of last year just to give you a sense of where we prepared and what are the things we did to prepare, and then also to talk to the new announcement. And then also give some, at the moment we don't have detailed reports on registration, from some universities, not from others, because we are getting those reports now. Then we need to analyze those and provide a proper analysis, which we can do for the committee. But I'm going to give you a sense of, from our engagement, where have there been troubles. And then also talk a little bit about the central application clearinghouse and the enrollment planning and the spaces and the issues of funding. I noticed some of the things that you had raised for this, and I'll try and incorporate those if they haven't been incorporated already. So just to say that at the conclusion of last year, actually you will recall that in 2016 there was significant protest action around the universities, especially towards the end of the year. Some of the examinations were affected. Many universities were even completing some of the classes using online tools. There were examinations that in some cases had to be postponed into the early of 2017. Second half of 2017 was very different. There were sporadic disruptions, but actually most institutions were able to complete the academic year without any major disruptions. There were a couple, FISPACE and UCT. In particular, there were concerns of students as to why there had been a delay in the release of the AIR Commission report. So there were some disruptions around that. And then at CPUT, there had been some disruptions around enforcing outsourcing of staff and also the expulsion of students, which had also been related to COVID. The portfolio committee has gone to then we were quite happy actually that there was, despite some of the instability, there was a successful completion of the academic year. What we do is we have a meeting with the registrars of the institution before the registration process begins. None of us was present at that meeting. We met with student representatives at that meeting. We met with the finance executive and we met with the registrars just to resolve any outstanding issues on readiness for the 2018 year. We had that meeting. Many of the issues that needed to be ironed out were ironed out there. Then, December, the announcement of the president's response to the AIR Commission. And on the 16th of December, President announced that we are introducing fully subsidized free higher education and training for poor and working class students. And that we will be providing the student and the students. I must really say to the select committee that as a department we are really excited about this development. It's really an achievement that we have, in a sense that we have achieved a huge amount of money to properly support for students. And in a sense, this followed the release of the AIR Commission report and quite an intensive deliberation, I think you will know, through the Interministerial Committee that was appointed to work with National Treasury, with the CPME and with the department to develop a response to the AIR Commission. That committee, which did the modelling that was necessary to look at what were the different options that were available to us as government, and then that announcement was made in December. You will also understand, of course, maybe just to say around those costing models, that we estimated on the basis of those models that there were obviously assumptions that are implicit in those models, and one of them is that approximately 40% of first-time entry students would qualify as a new student. So that means in terms of the 350 threshold, which is a significant increase on the previous first-time threshold of 122. What we then needed to do, of course, to understand also that as much as it's a very, very welcome announcement for our students, and we are already the fastest growing budget environment as it is now, we are by far the fastest growing budget. That announcement then required that we work together very intensively as a company to make sure that we're ready for 2018. Because it was really by the 16th of December, the departments are closing, universities are mostly closed. So we had to immediately kick into work out what can we do immediately to ensure that we are implementing this by the start of the year. And you may have seen some of the communication. There is a frequently asked questions document that is on the website. Any of these documents, if you don't have, you can share them with you. But we work together with the university through the USAC, which is the University of London, the right council, the university body, with the colleges of PBS, USAC, as well, which is wonderful to talk about them. And then also with NISBA very closely to make sure that we were ready at least with our, because there are policy implications as well, of course, the new announcement. So the frequently asked questions are there. There are some many complexities, of course, which we need to work out. In order to give effect to the President's announcement, what essentially we are doing is administering an expanded residency for poor and rich Scotland. And this is being phased over a period of 5 years. Now, there are some confusions, but I think that maybe those are being clarified over time. I know that the Minister is very keen to address the public on this issue. The key aspects of this, two key aspects are that the new announcement on the one level is also full bursary, so it's bursary for tuition and for other areas of support for accommodation and material for those with a family income below $350,000 per annum. And that is benefiting, in the first instance, only first-time entry students for 2018. What that means is that returning students are subject to the existing NISBA threshold of 122. But from 2018, those students are also qualifying for bursaries rather than loans. So that's the, in a sense, over the next 5 years, there are different cohorts that we have to start from 2019, first-time entry students, and it's phasing in over 5 years. And the new bursary scheme, as I say, covers the tuition possibly the month. And this one is the issue of allowances, because what this will allow us to do is to standardize allowances. It's a very big issue. It's very important. Even in some province, in one province, for example, there are two universities, and it's very different allowances for food. And the students are saying that we shop at the same shop. We're buying our food we are buying our food at Top House, whether we live in Sayanda or in Johannesburg. There are those, or in Cape Town for that matter. so we are in a position to begin to do that. And so I think that over time, some of those issues will begin to phase out. Of course, we do have the challenges of having students in very different categories at this moment. So what that also then requires is that we have quite a bit of policy work to do, and we as a department, working with a number of stakeholders, including of course NISBA, will be developing a policy on student funding, which needs to consolidate many of these things. The issues that are there is on the eligibility of students. The student housing issues, the transport allowances, the standardization of allowances, the policy on academic performance, how students would be qualify on academic grounds, the service requirements and the ethical requirements attached to receiving the bursary, the frequently asked questions address this as an issue. What is it that we want students to do in order to not pay back in monetary terms, but pay back in other terms? And in particular, there's a very clear statement that students must not be leaving the country as soon as they finish their studies, but must be able to at least contribute to the economy in some way. And that requires policy decisions and policies to be put put in place? And then also on satisfactory academic progress, what are the requirements that will allow students to continue receiving funding over the course of their studies? We also need to do a due diligence process, as you will probably know that there are issues of historic debt of NIFSA-funded students in the system, that already the contributions over the medium term have been significant to deal with that issue, but that we believe through the announcement that a due diligence process was done in this year to confirm that historic debt, to get on top of that historic debt and then to address it. And that process is going to be taking place throughout this year in line with the other fantastic news for us as DHEDS is that the announcement also included an additional subsidy funding for universities with the aim of increasing the proportion of higher education funding to 1% of GDP over a 5-year period. And members will know that part of the problem in a sense that caused the fees protest was that fees were increasing at above inflation levels and students' families were struggling to pay those fees, and part of that was because in a sense, we have been growing the system in terms of numbers, but on average, the real cost per student was also going down, despite the fact that we have increased the funding for higher education consistently over the years. So that is very, very welcome for the universities, because it means that we are also addressing the other issues. And of course, the same is true for TVET, but my colleagues will address that. And we're very, very excited about that. I think the universities are also very excited. Then, just in terms of the amount, I wish you could show them to you, but I think you have them on the presentation. The additional NIFSA funding just in this year is in the region of $7 billion. And just to give you a sense of the overview of the medium-term expenditure, in terms of the amount, just in terms of the subsidy increase just for this year, it's an amount of $2.4 billion for the university. For the TVET colleges, the subsidy increase is $1.4 billion. Overall, the additional amount for this year, including the NIFSA allocation, which is for universities already almost $4.6 billion just in this year, is a total of $12 billion. So when you add the medium-term increases, it's a total breakdown of $57 billion additional allocation announced over the medium term. So those budget estimates are there. In terms of, my other colleagues will do better with the technology. But let me continue because I don't want to waste your time, members. You know about I've already mentioned the history of what led to the announcement in 2016 of the 0% fee increase. And that announcement in October 2015 has really fundamentally changed, in a sense, the process for making decisions on fees. Of course, you'll also know that because universities are governed by their own councils, which are governed through the Higher Education Act. At that point, councils had determined, in consultation with their stakeholders, their own fees. But essentially what we entered into was a much deeper negotiated process as government, as universities, working together on fees. And effectively what we've had over the last 2 years is an agreement on an 8% fee increase within the system, a maximum cap. And what we have also done as government is allocated funding to cushion that 8% increase for the students that are NSFAS funded students all the way up to a family income of 600,000, both for universities and for private colleges. So to allow the institutions to have a budget that they can actually, that realistic budget, but to cushion that rather large group of students up to 600,000. So last year we had that 8% fee increase, and so it was a gap funding that all students could apply for. There was a system of application through the university. We are again allocating that gap funding for this year. From next year, that gap funding will be absorbed into the baseline. And then we are going to have to deal with the issue that has been coming, which is the issue of how do we regulate across the system the tuition fees at our institutions, so that we do not have a situation where some institutions are increasing their fees by over 10%, some institutions are not. We are going to a lot of work is required around that, and we are urgently addressing that this year through probably a stakeholder-based committee where we need to consult quite widely. And we have received advice from the Council on Higher Education already on this. We'll be moving from that advice. So that gap funding is critical. And just to give you an idea of the figures, the allocation that's available for this financial year, for this academic year, is 4.174 billion. So these are all significant amounts that have been placed into the system. So there is a lot of work to be done on systems and stability, and we are working on that. Just to not to hide that there have been problems at all, because they have, and I will talk to where those have been. But overall, we have been really quite pleasantly surprised that the registration process has, by and large, been free of disruption. And I say by and large, because it's not free of disruption. But despite the additional administrative requirements that have resulted from these many processes that are going on, particularly in relation to the funding, we have actually had a relatively peaceful registration period. And again, remember that registrations are indeed determined by the current enrollment plans of the institution. So we do have an enrollment plan in place, and universities are restricted by those enrollment plans just in terms of the numbers that they are taking in, and also in terms of whether they under or over enrolled in particular areas. We are aware that they may well have been walk-in students. Certainly students who qualified as first-time entering for the 350 threshold but had already received places. There was a mechanism in place with institutions to be able to identify those students so that they can be put on the system, even if they haven't applied for NSFAS. The more worrying one was students who maybe hadn't applied for institutional places but had applied for NSFAS and now qualified in terms of the new criteria. I can't give you a full report on that because we need to wait for the registration reports from the institution. But I do know that some institutions were taking walk-in students, and that there were processes in place should there be students that received places but hadn't necessarily put in the applications. There are processes in place to ensure that those students are put on the system in terms of getting the funding. So we will be doing a full analysis of those trends and the challenges, successes of registration when we've received all the reports from institutions. We have received from about half the institutions, but I can't give you a full picture. We do need to make sure that our planning for next year is done timely and that all our systems are aligned, given how many changes there are. Just in terms of NSFAS, I will leave most of the reporting to them, but you will also be aware that in terms of last year, there were some challenges experienced by NSFAS in rolling out the new student-centered model in terms of where NSFAS pays students directly, and that we do have a joint task team between NSFAS, the DHEC, and USAF, where we meet regularly. If not, last year they were meeting every 2 weeks. At the moment, maybe we're continuing that because of the new challenges that we need to address, the new policy issues, etc. So that joint task team has at least assisted both the DHEC, the universities, and NSFAS to ensure that we are managing the operational issues relating to the implementation of all of these new issues. But nevertheless, just to alert you to some of the overall challenges, there have been some protests and disruptions in the system, many of which I'm sure members you will know about. both through your engagement with constituencies and your engagement through the media, that some of the common themes, just to give you an overview, yes, NSFAS registration processes as they were last year, and the allowances for students and the timeliest payment of those, the amounts of allowances in part of the system, administrative challenges, those are an area of disruption that we do face in some institutions every year. For example, but they are very different across institutions. For example, at MUT, the process that we experienced last month at MUT, it was because there was a new service provider that the university had appointed to pay allowance. And they required students to put new banking details on their system. So there were issues there around that process. It's a very specific issue to that institution. As you will also know, there were a number of issues around staffing and salary negotiations. There were strikes at this, which was resolved quite early on in the year prior to the registration. The DUT strike went on for a very long time. I think it was 6 or 7 weeks in the end. And it really did disrupt and delay the registration process. But in the end, you'll also be aware that Deputy Minister was able to go and involve himself in a negotiation process there. And in the end, the strike did come to an end. And the staffing matters were resolved. But we must acknowledge that there was a... There was also an issue at Walter Cthulhu. There were a number of issues at Walter Cthulhu, and equally, the minister had sent 2 weeks ago our colleagues to go and engage there, meet with students there. There are a range of matters. There were some matters relating to staff who were part of an outsourced company, had that spilled over into institutions. By and large, however, the issues at Walter Cthulhu have been related to accommodation and student housing, and at other institutions as well. Maybe we should just note that I think we are experiencing that the expectations around student housing are very high. In fact, there are expectations on a number of issues that are very high as a result of the increased funding. And there's also always been a range of issues related to the quality of housing and access. So those are ongoing challenges that we need to address as a system. And at Walter Cecilia in particular, there was a conflict between students and management that the university introduced a new application system for the university and for the university residences, and the students were opposed to that system. So at the University of Zululand, there have been some trouble, and there was a period of closure for just about a week. Member Tutu University of Technology, I mentioned that problem. There was a brief closure of the university. University of KwaZulu-Natal, Peter Maritzburg campus, there was a process around student allowance that was resolved. UNISA early on, particularly UNISA in KZN, there was also some concerns around student allowances quite early on in the registration period. Walter Cecilia Courthair, Venda, and the University, all of these universities were at some point closed for brief periods of time. At the moment, they are not. Most of the universities are about to go on their first recess already. Durban University of Technology, I've talked about. The University of Mpumalanga, It's kind of disappointing in a way, because the students there are really receiving a whole lot of additional support that's meant because of the new university and the relatively small numbers of students. That university actually ended up closing a week early because there were some protests around allowances. So just to give you that overview. In terms of the Central Applications Clearinghouse, you will know that we've approved the policy for the Central Application Service, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of getting it on board, and it will, the draft bill will be coming, will be completed soon, and the parliamentary process is going to be initiated soon after that. So within this year. Maybe just to say that we are working on CAP, and you will be receiving the legislation. It is going to be implemented over time, but with CATCH, which is the current system where we are, where students who have applied or haven't applied and are still looking for places, where we refer them. It has been receiving a large volume of calls this year in the region of over 50,000. So that service has been useful to many students. And then I've got some slides in there just to show you the figures there. In terms of enrollment, I think you will know that we have enrollment plans, and of course this year we had in the region of 200,000 places within the university system for first-time entering students. those figures are giving you a sense of the projected targets for the medium term. And yeah, just in terms of total enrollment, but in terms of the actual audited figures for last 2016, we're looking at just under 1 million headcount students in the system. About a third of those are in distance programs. For 2017 unaudited figures, we are projecting over 1 million students. What that means is that we are on track certainly to meet our medium-term targets, and it's good, and maybe even the entry targets in 2016. And then, just in terms of, to give you assurance of what we are working on, I've told you that we are doing a lot of work on the university scheme, very important. We are doing the student funding policy, the fee regulation policy and framework. We need to continue work to support the processes to identify funding for the missing middle students. Because even though we are addressing the core enrollment of students, there are those students that we would still call missing middle, unable to get bank loans, unable to afford the fees, and we are working on a possible funding scheme for those students. We are going to analyze the 2018 process and look at trends and report to you on that. We need to ensure capable planning for next year, and we just hope that together as stakeholders in the system, we can ensure that universities are safe, that they are open for learning, and that students are getting the support that they need. We do have a lot of work which we can report to you on another time around supporting student success and all of those issues. And then the universities always take up too much space. We must give space to our Tibet College. They're also very important, doing very important work.
No, thank you for the presentation. We hand over then to the human factor, the institutions of choice.
A very good morning to you, Honorable Chair and members. By way of introduction, my name is Mandla Buthelezi. I'm the acting chief director in the chief directorate TVET Systems Planning and Institutional Support. The chief directorate, through its four directorates, is responsible for issues that relate to governance, management in TVET colleges. It deals with issues of monitoring and evaluation of performance of TVET colleges. It also deals with the issues that relate to collection of information and enrollment information, and it is also responsible for enrollment planning and compilation of strategic plans and annual performance plans for colleges for approval by the minister. It also deals with the registration and monitoring of private colleges in the country. I did not include the background to this because the brief I got was that we are going to be dealing with the registration numbers. But however, I need to point out that in preparation for the 2018 academic year last year, what we did was to actually go to convene a meeting, a strategic session with the 50 TVET colleges across the country. And that strategic meeting was attended by the principals of the 50 TVET colleges accompanied by their 50 chairpersons of councils. The brief there was to actually indicate to the management and governance of the colleges the importance of strategic planning and compilation of annual performance plans, and also the issue of compilation of operational plans for colleges, so that they know, they plan for their enrollment, they plan for everything that they are going to do, in so that nothing that happens by accident at a college when management and governance are there. So we convened those sessions, and then we, after those sessions, what we did was to embark on a process of strategic planning, whereby we invited the principals of the 50 colleges together with people that are responsible for planning in the colleges. The rationale for that was to actually deal with the issues of enrollment planning for 2018. And we did that around September. And in doing that, our focus was on enrollment in terms of the ministerial funded programs, that is your NCV programs and your Report 191 programs, and also looking at the available funding, because in planning for those programs you have to, because they are largely funded, and then we have to look at the funding that is available in terms of those programs. And our planning was on two fronts. One front dealt with the issue of ministerial funded programs, and another front dealt with the issue of occupational programs, which are not funded by the department. So in terms of the of ministerial funded programs, colleges were limited by the funding that was available for them in terms of the 80%, 20% split. And in terms of the occupational programs, colleges were not, they could plan whatever number that they could afford in terms of available funding that they are getting either from the CITAS or private donors or companies that are sending their students to colleges. So today's brief in terms of numbers is largely on ministerial funded programs, that is your NCV programs and a Report 191 program. I need also to indicate that we have put up a survey in terms of which we link to our TVET MIS system. There's a system that we have developed, which is Management Information System, that we have developed as the department in conjunction with a CINOP. Which provided funding for that, but we have problems with that, because when we started implementing it in 2016, there were teething problems, but those problems have not gone away, but we are working on that together with now another funder which is looking at reviewing the TVET MIS and also coming up with a repair plan for the TVET. What we did in order to collect this information, because normally, ordinarily, this information is then collected through the TVET MIS system, but because of the challenges that we have around the TVET MIS system, what we did was to put up a survey alongside the TVET MIS system in which we requested colleges to upload, to capture information into that survey so that we could have numbers in terms of what their enrollment looked like, and also to indicate, to get a sense of spaces that they have available in 2015. So my presentation will look at the national statistics, provincial statistics, and we're also going to look at comments around the statistics that I'm going to present to you members, and also look at challenges, registration issues, challenges that we experience at the point of registration at the beginning of this year. And I need also to point out in advance that these numbers deal with the issue of the first intake. As you'd recall that we've got a trimester system in colleges, that is three intakes in terms of N1 to N2. And we also have a semester, that is two intakes during a year. And then we have a year intake, that is your NCV. I mean, ordinarily these statistics deal with the issues of we requested colleges to actually, through that survey, to indicate to us what spaces have they planned for in terms of their plan, because we went out last year to deal with the issues of planning. So we had numbers. Each and every college had, you know, planned for certain, you know, numbers. So what we did was to, in terms of, this is the national picture that you are seeing, in terms of provinces, we find that on the national front, what we have, there were about 298,000 spaces available across 50 colleges. But what we see there is that in terms of actual enrollment that has happened at the beginning of this year, that is your NCV program, the first semester and the first trimester, the enrollment stands at 305,444. So there is an over-enrollment across colleges of 7,377. And when we zoom down into provinces, and then when you look at Eastern Cape, this is what the numbers look like in Eastern Cape. And I need also to indicate that one of the colleges out of the eight colleges in Eastern Cape did not provide us with information at the point at which we requested the information. And at the point at which we compiled this presentation, we had not received information around that. So what does that mean? It means that there is a chance that the student places that are there, the total student places on your right-hand side, would have been more than what it is, because one college has not reported its available student places there. But in terms of the same, will go for student admitted, 34754, the number would have been more had Ikala particularly indicated their enrollment. So overall, there are still places available if you look at that. There are still places available in Eastern Cape, particularly at KSD. In other colleges, as you see, the negative indicates that there is over-enrollment by that number. For instance, East Cape Midlands, there is over-enrollment of 447 learners. Ingwe, 150, and so forth, and so on. But generally, if you look at Eastern Cape, you'll find that there are about 1,335 spaces still available, which have not been taken up in this first round of enrollment or registration. And then we look at Free State with its four colleges. That is the situation in Free State. Across colleges, there is over-enrollment, which brings to 2,830 over-enrollment in the province of Free State. And Gauteng, I mean, there is over-enrollment of 130 in Gauteng. 830 in the province as a whole. But if you zoom into at a college level, you'll notice that some of the colleges still have spaces, but on the provincial front, you'd notice that there is over-enrollment of about 130. KwaZulu-Natal, Chair, I need to indicate here that about four colleges out of the nine colleges that are there in the province, did not upload their information into the survey for us to be able to analyze it. So there is a chance that, again, that total number of spaces available would have been more instead of being 37,249. Same with the students that are admitted. I should think there would be more than 33,800 should we have that information. It would increase, you know, enormously, given the large enrollment numbers in these colleges. And student spaces that are still available in the province, I should think with the numbers from the four colleges that did not report, would have been more than 3,408 in KZN. Chairperson, in the interest of time, I'm not going to, because if you look at the provinces, we are going to use the same operas, but if you look at the province the same way, we are going to look at the province the same way, looking at the places that are available across colleges in the province and the admission that has happened, and also what student places are still available or not available, and what enrollment is like in each and every province. Let me just go to the comments. The comments relate to the fact that in this presentation, we don't have data for four colleges which are resident in KZN and one in Eastern Cape. So in total, we don't have information from five colleges out of 50 colleges that we have across the country. So in general, Chair, is that there has been over-enrollment across these 45 colleges of about 7,000. There are certain issues that we picked up at the beginning of the year when actual registration unfolded. For instance, maybe members would know, because this was cited on TV, the issue of the stampede that occurred at Capricorn TVET College in Polokwane, but that issue was resolved through our regional offices. As members would know, that we have got six regional offices across the country. There were student unrest, but I need to indicate, Chair, that the majority of these student unrest emanate from issues relating to funding, that is, relating to NSFAS, largely allowances, students saying that they have not been paid allowances and so on and so forth. We have not experienced any unrest emanating from the core of what these colleges are doing, which relates to teaching and learning. We have not had such incidents where we have disruption just because of that. In particular, there were unrest at Ehlanzeni, but again, particularly at Barberton campus, but those were resolved by our regional offices again. And there were issues around the results. You know, some of the students were trying to disrupt and threaten other students from attending classes as a result of the fact that they had not received their full results. They were still outstanding results. And other issues that when these students, you know, are on the disruptive mode, begin to raise as part of their demands, though their demands would largely be around allowances, but then they will begin to add issues relating to certificates and diplomas that they had not received. And again, what we found was that the issues, there were issues around application payment of application fees and registration fees. But what happened at the beginning, in light of the announcement made by the former president, what happened at the beginning of this year, the late DDG, Mr. Patel, convened a meeting of the principals of the 50 TVET colleges to actually go through the announcement and also to give guidance in terms of how should they go about in terms of enrollment at their colleges. And the late DDG did emphasize the issue that for funded students, it is not necessary that they pay this application fee or registration fee or whatever you call it. So, but then what we found at the point of actual registration and enrollment, we received complaints through our region that there were colleges that were charging these fees despite the fact that principals were warned against these issues. There were also issues around students that were complaining about non-admission. Those students were returning students and other students that have failed subjects and so forth and so on. But those we requested the principals of the colleges in question to actually deal with them and resolve them. And the report that we got was that they were resolved. There was also the issue of confusion about the online application for returning students at Orbit, which became an issue. And there was only one student involved, but it became an issue in the sense that the student went in public to actually indicate that the online application system of the particular college is not functional, but only to find that this was set up for returning students only. And these students, upon investigation, it was found that this student was a first-time student, was a new student, it was not a returning student. As such, the student could not be able to use the online system that the Orbit had set up for its returning students. And historically, the issue of Central Application Office, particularly in KZN, we picked up that there was, in KZN, the majority of TVET colleges were part of what was established by the university, the then University of Natal, which is Central Application, whereby, you know, the province as such had its own central application system, and some of the colleges were part of that central application system. And students that went there, I mean, they had to also, because some of the colleges did not recognize that central application system, they had to also to go to the colleges to do their application. And students were complaining that now they have to do their applications twice, because they've been to the central application system, which some of the colleges are not linked to in KZN, and as such, they could not pick up the applications of their students. And as a result, that created, made students to actually go up in arms in terms of saying that, look now, I have to apply twice at the same college. So, Chair, I should think those are the issues that I would want to bring to the attention of the. I should think my colleague, Mr. Dubert, would deal with issues relating to funding, and enrollment. You know, the correlation between funding and the enrollment, and how does that expedite the process of us meeting the targets of the NDP, or limit us from reaching the target as set out in the NDP document. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jube. I'll give you literally 5 minutes. That should not be a long presentation.
Thank you, Chair. I think if I can just touch on that quickly. So the new funding, as Tandi already alluded to, the new funding that we will receive, what that will take us towards is as follows. So there was a 1.4 billion increase in subsidies.
Okay.
Now the subsidy will be. There's the slide. So the additional baseline increase for CVET for 2018-19 is 5.3 billion in totality. That is split up between 1.4 billion for program funding and 1.3 billion for infrastructure efficiency grant. So that's the DHEP portion of that. Then the NASFAS component is 2.5 billion, but that will be separately discussed. I'm just going to focus quickly on the 2.7 billion increase in subsidy. So what it will do is the 1.4 billion increase, it represents an 18.78% increase from the baseline. So that's on the subsidy component. I think what is very important to note, the funding policy for the TVET colleges is different than universities. You're quite familiar with that. There's an 80% policy that the state must pay for, and there's a 20% that's applicable to students that pays 20% of the fees. So for the 80%, this additional funding, if you recall in the past, we didn't fund at the required 80%. If you recall all those previous discussions, the shortfalls that we had in the system, that 80% funding that government was supposed to produce was sitting at about 54%. So the new funding that we're receiving now will take that 54% to 69%. So there's still a shortfall, that's what I want to indicate. So the new funding is not taking us beyond our targets. I think that's what I wanted to say. So this new funding is plugging that gap. So it's taking that 54% to 69%. And over the MTF, we'll move to 73%, then we'll go to 76% in 3 years. So in 4 years' time, we should reach the 80% level. And that's based on the current enrollment plan. So we can only expand after about 4 years when we're actually funding at the level we're supposed to fund. I think that is very important to note. So everyone thinks that get this new funding, you're going to increase the system capacity. That's not true. We're just using this fund to fund the required level that we're supposed to and cover out the shortfalls. That's called the phased-in approach of the education. Good. So thank you, Chair. I just wanted to show that. So continuing the slide, we estimate in 4 to 5 years, then we can expand the system. So Chair, in terms of our IPP target, you asked what is happening in our IPP target. And you can just see they do not increase in our target. It's exactly the same figure over the next 4 years. All that will happen if you look at our IPP target, the two lines at the top. There is one headcount enrollment that's funded by the state, and then a headcount enrollment funded by the colleges. As the new money comes in, you can see that the enrollment funded by the state slightly increases, but the headcount enrollment funded by TVET colleges decreases, because that's why we're plugging those shortfall gaps. Because you recall that TVET colleges have to use their own funds to pay in for the money that the state couldn't reduce. So now, luckily, the new funding is taking care of that. So that will relieve their cash flow, so they'll have more cash flow available. So that's what happens on our plan at a macro level.
So the bottom line is not changing, but we're covering that gap. So we're making sure that the colleges do not have to cross-subsidize the responsibility of the state. And like I said, in 4 years' time, we should be able to expand. So that's linking the funding to the enrollment. You said I've got 5 minutes. I think I used my 5 minutes. Maybe I can spend more time if you have more questions. That's fine, Chair. Good. Thank you.
So we need to
have
the can we be prepared with those lines from the student collection center?
Okay, thank you. Did you prepare?
See, we will make it available. Initially, we thought we did period registration. Therefore, our slides are on registration, as Dr. Guttuletti alluded to, but I have slides on the funding, which I will make available. I can see apologies for that, Mr. Minister.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Make them available to the committee by when can we be able to make them available by today?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Okay, yeah. No, by today. They are going to send for the printing and the organizer. Let us move over to the Addis Convention so that at the end of the presentations, only then can we engage the presentation. In the interest of time. Addis Convention, I made aware of the fact that the LA is still in the process of the Refugees Convention. We are going to get everything, but we are not going to vote on this present up until LA is through with their convention. I think this is how it is supposed to go. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Shirley Lloyd, Director of the National Qualifications Framework, which deals with this matter, and the Chief Director, Mr. Khalid Jeppe, is Chief Director of International Relations, which deals with all our international conventions and our projects. So thank you for the opportunity to brief you about the Addis Convention. And that's the purpose. I won't waste time on that slide. Just to say that in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution and Section 341 and 342 of the National Assembly Rules, we have provided documentation. If you do not have the full set of documents, we will make sure you do get them, but we have availed you of those. I'm just checking with our colleagues, Mr. James Masalela, if you have copies of this live presentation. Everybody should have a copy of that. Just a bit of background. When we presented to the portfolio committee on the higher education and training, they requested us to give quite a background, and we thought it would be very useful so that the select committee could get an idea of where it has come from and how far along the journey we are and where we are in the process. So very briefly, the Addis Convention actually replaces the Arusha Convention of 1981. And South Africa was not a signatory to the Arusha Convention at that stage, being an apartheid state and also not being able to sign it, so we did not sign it. In a meeting of African states, however, which took place in Addis Ababa in December 2014, it was agreed to develop a revised convention, and which is now called the Addis Convention. And the revised Addis Convention provides the general guidelines for the implementation of the recognition of studies, certificates, diplomas, degrees, and other academic qualifications in higher education in African states. Internal and external consultations took place in South Africa in 2015. On our journey, we also received the opinions of the state law advisors for domestic law and for international law in 2015 as well. We also made presentations to the Social Protection and Communications and Human Development Directors General Cluster, and that took place in 2015 and again 2016 because there was a slight amendment in the Addis Convention itself. Then further external and internal consultations in 2016 finally presented by the Minister to Cabinet on the 29th of March in 2017. The Minister of Higher Education and Training then submitted a letter and the convention to the Speaker of the National Assembly, and she requested the Speaker's assistance in tabling the Addis Convention to Parliament. And this letter and the request went to the Speaker on the 15th of November 2017. The department was then requested to present the Addis Convention to the Portfolio Committee, which we did on the 14th of February this year, and then the Speaker had referred the revised Addis Convention to this select committee, and we are presenting to you as per the minutes of the 28th of November 2017, and that is why we are presenting to you today to brief you. All the required documents, however, are available. So the consultation is very important because it affects a very wide range of stakeholders. And in fact, we had requested the South African Qualifications Authority on behalf of the department to hold a very a wide stakeholder workshop. So we consulted both externally intensively with SACWA, the three quality councils, namely the Quality Council for Trade and Occupation, the Council of Higher Education, or the CHE as we know it, and UMALUSI. We also consulted with education and training providers, both public and private ones, the CSIS, Sector Education and Training Authority, the National Schools Authority, Organized Business and Labour, public, private education and community constituencies, which are part of the NSA, and then professional bodies. And we know that that is very important as we read the newspapers and the press around those issues. The following government departments were also consulted because they deal with directly with aspects of allowing students to study or travel or people to come in with work visas. And these would be the Department of Basic Education, International Relations and Cooperative Governance, the International Relations, the Department of Home Affairs, and the Department of Justice through the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. Now, how did the Arusha Convention become the Addis Convention? Just to brief you, there are clear differences between what the Arusha Convention wanted to achieve and what the Addis Convention aims to achieve. The Arusha Convention was a bit of a looser arrangement, in that it only sought to provide an enabling environment across African states for higher education qualifications, such as your certificates, your diplomas, your degrees, and that these should be recognized by each other. And this was enabled through accepting the African states across Africa, accepting principles of harmonization, and referencing qualifications. And so the signatories to the Arusha Convention had this sort of loose enabling environment agreement. However, when the 2014 calls came for the Arusha Convention to be changed, these were especially done in the light of the launch of the second decade of education for Africa from 2006 to 2015. And that is that plan of action which refers to higher education as one of seven areas of focus. The consideration of the paramount role that the systems of education can and must play in promoting continental integration through cooperation between higher education institutions. Also the reaffirmation of the World Declaration on Higher Education for the 21st Century Vision and Action. Developments in African states themselves related to the development of their own national qualification framework, and then more specifically, the focus being placed on developments in the area of recognition of prior learning, articulation, mobility, and access to community. So these became the drivers for the Arusha to be changed to the Addis. South Africa then participated in the 2014 Addis Convention discussions. In fact, just prior to the December meeting, South Africa had been very involved in being included as one of the countries that is
viewed as being a leader in qualifications development, qualifications framework, RPO, etc. So the request has come to South Africa to assist in pre-work to put together what will become the revised ADIS convention. And so we gave written and oral input in fact in different meetings. The revised convention was eventually adopted in ADIS Ababa 12 December 2014. It was signed by 17 member states, but South Africa only participated, but we did not sign it because we have elected rather to have a go through a process of ratification. Some countries elected not to go through a process of ratification, and they were therefore mandated just to sign. The convention will come into force though once 10 member states have signed it or ratified it. Now, one of the objectives of this ADIS convention, particularly to strengthen and promote inter-regional and international cooperation in the field of recognition of qualifications. Also to define and put in place effective quality assurance and accreditation mechanisms at national, regional and continental levels. And this is hugely important in terms of the credibility of qualifications and how we view qualifications from other countries and where they are placed in terms of our own skill sets and our own type of qualifications. Encourage and promote the most effective use of human resources available in Africa, and also to speed up the development of countries and to limit the African drain. Facilitate an exchange and greater mobility of students, teachers and researchers on the continent. And we know that it appears right now, just from research being done, that there is quite a significant growth in the research output, especially in very areas of great innovation that is happening as a result of a lot of the agreements that are starting to emerge through the discussions that happened in the ADIS Convention. So that is an encouraging sign. Setting up high-level joint training and research programs, and we know that South Africa has a number of these as well. Improve and reinforce the collection and exchange of information, and then contribute to the harmonization of qualifications, taking into account global trends. And currently, there is a global NQF convention being developed, which will reference and harmonize qualifications across the globe in terms of learning outcomes and make it easier to be able to understand the knowledge, skills and competencies that people who have qualifications from other parts of the globe actually have in terms of this convention. In terms of the implications of the agreement for us, if we sign and ratify the ADIS Convention, this strengthens and promotes multilateralism and international cooperation. It ensures, again, as I'm saying, a very important component, credible and reliable recognition of qualifications achieved across countries on the continent. And it safeguards those qualifications. And in fact, on Monday, which is a very interesting thing that has happened in South Africa in order to help this happen, is that the South African Qualifications Authority, or SAQA, launched what they call their e-certification, whereby now when people apply for foreign qualification verification, there's an electronic system that vets it, screens it, validates it, and this is one of the strongest moves to make sure that people receive their documentation quickly, but it also helps to vet any fake or bogus qualifications or misrepresented qualifications. So South Africa is the first country in the world to do this, and it's seen as groundbreaking use of technology, innovation, to protect the quality of what we actually have coming into the country, and also our own students who go out and people who go out to work. So that is a very new development. It also contributes to harmonization of qualifications across the continent, enhances South Africa as an educational destination, and currently, and Mr. Jeppy will probably even have different later figures, but at the last count, there were 60 96,000 foreign students studying at our institution. So that's a significant number of foreign students coming here and studying and adding to the richness of our research as well. Foreign students add value, therefore, in the research productivity in projects such as the SKA project. And our minister, Naledi Pandor, as we know, was very, very instrumental when the SKA project was finally given to South Africa. So this is one of the areas where she, as our minister, will be able to work very effectively now with the research of people from other countries. We also have, as I say, a reputation as a leading country in SADC and in the Africa, and in Africa in mutual recognition of qualifications agreements. We acknowledged as having a very well-established NQF, and we implemented very well. Yes, there are challenges and hiccups, but we are seen to be a leading country in that regard. And also we have, this will provide a credible and accountable mechanism to manage the recognition of studies, certificates, diplomas, degrees, etc., between African states and South Africa. So it has very many positive aspects. How is this managed and how will it be managed in the future? Just to brief the Honourable Committee members, the Department's NQF Director currently performs our NQF-related functions in a monitoring, evaluation and oversight role. We do work very, very closely with our partners, namely SAQWA and the three quality councils, who are the operational and implementation arms of the NQF and its mechanisms. But in the NQF Act, the Minister is given overall executive responsibility for the NQF, for SAQWA, for the quality councils, and also to uphold the public credibility of the NQF. And so the NQF Directorate supports her in that role. So we do perform functions related to mutual recognition of qualifications and bilateral agreements in partnership again with our Chief Director of International Relations, as they require us to do. So there is a little bit of capacity in the department, and there is initial work that has happened. We have an interdepartmental NQF steering committee where we have Department of Basic Education ourselves, and on invitation when they would like to attend, Department of Home Affairs, DIRCO, and Department of Justice. So there is that committee to be able to look at specific issues related to foreign student visas, work visas, etc. The implementation of the convention, as it is going to be implemented, we envisage there will be an increased workload in the department. And therefore, there will have to be organizational and personnel implications which need to be qualified once the scale of implementation is agreed to in South Africa. So the extent of our involvement in implementing the Addis Convention will still need to be negotiated as the convention rolls out and matures. SAQWA itself has very well established and functioning directorates for foreign qualifications, for the evaluation thereof, verification of these, and they have an international liaison directorate. They have therefore processes in place, and I've just spoken about the e-certificate launch of that, which I think is going to be very cost-effective, time-efficient, and also be a quality assurance mechanism. As the implementation again of the convention is envisaged to increase workload again, SAQWA will need to be supported probably with additional staff and money, but we don't know the extent yet. We are already flagging, however, that there will probably be some additional work, and at that stage we will then approach the Treasury. So I've just very, very briefly summarised. I won't go into the slide. Just reiterating, National Treasury will be approached at the appropriate time once we know what the extent of the work is. Once the convention is ratified, the Minister will publicise it, communicate it with all affected parties. We will use the GCIS for communication purposes, plus our own communication mechanisms and those of our partners, such as SAQWA. The implications for vulnerable groups, and I think this is quite an important component to consider. Our own white paper proposed school education and training proposes the development of an internationalization policy. And so the department has already developed a draft internationalization policy, and this is currently being consulted. And this draft policy recognizes the global trends of migration and mobility of people and vulnerable groups. So the Addis Convention already provides some kind of an enabling framework, and our policy, our draft policy, starts recognizing that these vulnerable groups exist. So we are not caught off guard. Our policy frameworks are working in tandem already to create a very conducive environment for the Addis Convention to be implemented and for the Department of Higher Education and Training to be able to manage that component of the migration issues and people coming in to study and work, especially the vulnerable groups. It was very important for us, however, to have the opinion from the Chief State Law Advisors. It was a requirement, but also just for us as a department. And so we received the opinions both from the domestic and the international Chief State Law Advisors, and they advised that the convention is consistent with the domestic law of the Republic and the Commonwealth, which is important. They also advised from the international law that the convention does not violate international law, and that following parliamentary approval, the instrument of ratification must be deposited with DIRPA, whereafter it will be sent to UNESCO. They also advised that the NTS Act, read together with the Higher Education Act of 1997, is consistent with the requirements of the revised Addis Convention. So again, legally, our enabling framework supports the adoption thereof. In terms of self-executing provisions, the Addis Convention has no self-executing provisions, and therefore it may be tabled for ratification in Parliament in terms of Section 231. 4 of the Constitution to be enacted into law. The implementation of the Addis Convention is enabled, as I've said, through the Act, the NTS Act, and provisions therein. Section 8.1 to Section 8.4 of the Act provides for the responsibilities of the Minister, which I refer to, as she has this overall executive responsibility for public credibility, coherence, SACWA, NQS. And Section 13.1M of the same Act gives SACWA the responsibility to verify qualifications. So we have a well-established system, our legal system, our regulatory and our policy systems are all in line. The Department is therefore satisfied that the following articles from the revised Addis Convention can be complied with. We have the mechanisms to achieve the goals of Article 2, which I presented earlier on, one of the goals of the Addis Convention. We have those mechanisms. We currently receive funding from the fiscus. We have advised and highlighted and flagged as we get to understand the greater implications and decide on our own involvement in implementation. We will need more money, and then South Africa will sign and ratify the convention as a member state of the Africa region. So those can be complied with. Therefore, we have requested the Select Committee approves the presentation to Parliament. But Chair, I take your note that this is a briefing to you, and we will follow with questions when you want to ask us those questions. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Siyabonga for Sanbona. Good morning, everyone. My name is Stephen Bonney, and I'm the executive officer at NSFAS. It is an honor for us as NSFAS to come here and present a status update. The last time we were here, there was no EQ pronouncement. The last time we were here, there was a lot of great deal of nervousness in our office. And that nervousness was caused by the Hare Commission report that had gone out, that had made the recommendation that NSFAS must start to exist and that a contingency loan must be introduced. And also, since the last time we were here, there's been a great deal of changes internal to the organization around how we operate. Because the last time we were here, we were offering a combination of loans and bursaries. Now we are offering only bursaries. And the last time we were here, we had caps of 76,000 that we could issue out to students. Now we don't have caps anymore. It's a fully funded bursary. Also, the last time we were here, we had a 29 billion loan book that we all the view was going to continue to increase, and we're going to continue to make money out of that. And now our recovery rate is really reducing since the pronouncement. Also, the last time we were here, we had an APP target that involved raising funds because the pot of funding was low, with an APP target that related to the recoveries and a number of APP related targets that now become null and void given the pronouncement. So also the last time we were here, we were operating on different policy, and now we have a new policy on the go. I just wanted to just give that context as the nature of our organization. Internal to the organization, we have gone through three transitions. There was a transition on free education 2 years ago in 2015, and there was a big failure in our application process in 2017, and therefore a lot of our people were really fatigued in terms of the rate of change that was happening to the organization. So it is in that context that we are sitting here and be able to provide you with an update that is informed by two parts. Because of the way our systems failed at the beginning of last year, we still have a project called 2017 and 2016 because we needed to close those many gaps. And also now we are on 2018 and we believe that 2018 has got a number of variables going forward. So we've issued out a PEC chair and we'll just like to take you through it. It is comprehensive for two reasons. One is give you a sense of what you are working with, and two is to try and answer some of the key questions that you had asked us the last time, and be able to also give you context. So I'll go right into the discussions, and our colleagues in the team will always come in as and when we need them. We'll definitely do that. I've already covered just more the executive summary of what we're dealing with. And I just want to go to a slide called 1.2 in the document. This is just reflecting on the key changes that we were talking about in terms of what has changed. And also it is our wish that by the time we leave, the committee will have a clear sense of what exactly we're working with. So these are some of the key challenges. I think the major challenge now that we are facing is that in line with optimizing and making it easy to make funding decisions, we've introduced a system that is the ease of communication between the institutions and ourselves, which is an integration system. And that system has asked institutions to share with us registration data in real time against which we can make payment. And that is the biggest paying platform at the moment because we went and worked directly with the suppliers to the institutions to make the data ease of transfer. But the institutions themselves are starting to change the data.
Our request that we lower the noise level
The institutions themselves are struggling to integrate. So you'll hear a lot of words around integration going forward. I just want to move on to the next slide. It's called 2.1. The slide is called application update. We closed our application process on the 30th of November, and at that time we were sitting at about just over 300,000 applications. And then post the pronouncement, we opened our application process. We can now confirm that we are sitting at 410,000 applications. Also, we want to inform the select committee that that 410,000 applications is still not a true reflection of how many more applications we're still going to receive. We are expecting a lot more to come through. 27,000 applications with outstanding documents. We are contacting the students. Last week, we were sitting at 31,000 issues. Now we have an issue of about 27,000 applications that are outstanding. They're worried that there's other conversations while the presentation is on the go. I think that's what the special expression is. They're trying to
promote.
Yeah. Well, everybody has their presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. The officials from the department should not worry about it. We said the week of the committee, I'm talking to members because the department has got a property. We're supposed to leave at 12, some of us meet. So I was checking with them whether they're able to leave for the this particular meeting.
We went to the portfolio committee a few weeks ago. We happened to have a presentation that did not have page numbers and it was cluttered. And we were in trouble with the portfolio committee. So we tried by all means now to come and look slightly different. So I'm back on the screen.
2.1.
I'm on the slide called 2.1. We're sort of giving you a sense that we are sitting at 410,000 applications. Now, the 410,000 application is a combination of two groups. Some of the students that may be doing second year but are applying for the first time to NSFAS, but also just have very new students who may have been doing matric the previous year or in the last 2 to 3 years. So that's the combination of what the 410,000 looks like. Of the 410,000 applications, we are 258,000 for universities, 152,000 TVETs. This is a much better stat because the last time when we were sitting at 310,000, we had about 295,000 coming from universities. So the walking helped a lot to move the numbers of TVETs to where it is right now. So we can confirm that a large number of those walking students are coming from TVETs. We said that 27,000 applications have got missing documents. There were 31,000 in the last 2 weeks, and we're using our contact center to call the students to help us with the application process. Most of these students are already in class, so it's a struggle to get them to send us the information. We also would like to confirm to the committee that we have made upfront payment to institutions. This is an important factor because at the beginning of every year in January, we make payments to institutions so that they can be able to address administrative issues and also help in the payment of allowances to students. So we make those upfront payments to institutions. So there are institutions who have come back and said they don't have money to pay students, but in actual fact money was paid to them. And for NSFAS is responsible for 18 institutions. The rest of the other institutions are funded directly from the money that we give to them. We do have some disbursement challenges, but these ones are less of problematic than before, because once we get registration data from institutions, we are able to pay. Without registration data, we don't know which student to pay, and therefore we don't release money. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that I think remains a big challenge that is not being properly answered. Without registration data confirming that somebody is a student, NSFAS can't pay an allowance to students. I think that's been a big challenge. But we've gone on to institutions where we receive registration data to pay directly. Here I'm referring to the 18 institutions. Also what we've done is that we, for the TVETs, we went in and made sure that we sent our officials on the ground to assist with the application process. I will skip the next two slides so that at least we can be able to talk about it. How did we approach the fee-free? We approached fee-free in we said there were going to be three categories. Category number one, there were going to be those students who applied to NSFAS directly up until the 30th of November. Category two will be those students who were walk-ins after the pronouncement that sort of started to believe that we qualify and therefore can apply for NSFAS. And that's how the application process was opened by the institutions. The third category were those students who did not apply to NSFAS, did not apply to institutions, but were sort of looking for spaces. We are busy dealing with the second category because we are sort of 90% there with the first category. Those who applied after the free pronouncement, we are busy processing those applications. And institutions were told by the department that anyone who has an NSFAS reference number must be registered. Now, we remain challenged in this one because there are some institutions that still are not adhering to this particular policy. Students have been sent back or told you need to get a confirmation from NSFAS. NSFAS is not sending any communication to any student because the rule is as follows. If you are not accepted by the institution, NSFAS cannot fund you, because we are trying to avoid the influx of students who get a confirmation from NSFAS and they don't have a space at the university and they start demanding places. So that is slightly different. When people say that I didn't get my confirmation from NSFAS, it has been deliberate on our side to say only when the institution says we've accepted you, we've got the registration data, do we say yes, funding has been received. So a number of students that you may have gotten yourselves as individual leaders in your respective areas, students have been told, I keep calling NSFAS, and NSFAS says, I'm waiting for financial eligibility decision. It's because we're waiting for academic information, and most of them qualify. We also have people who qualify over and above the funds that we currently have. That's why we are not making those decisions. So I think it's very important that we articulate that is one of the bending platforms and why we operate the way we do. I've got a slide called slide 2.4 on the screen, which really is talking about the details around the application. If we're just to talk to how did we, what did we do with the 410,000? We're saying in total, we have applications that have been received, 410,000. We've looked at most of the applications and thought 10,000 people do not meet the criteria, and then we have about 600 of those that were withdrawn. So basically, out of the range, were 10,760 applications. We've evaluated for funding decisions 399,000 applications, and we can be able to say that 270,000 have been evaluated. I've spoken about the 27 that is awaiting information. Out of that 370,000 applications, we can then say to you applications that have been passed through our case management, which means we've checked if we've got the right information. We are comfortable that these people can be funded, a decision can be made. We're sitting at 350,000. Out of the 350,000 applications that we've got, there are those that are funding eligible with admission offer. So when you say funded with admission offer, we're saying those students who have been accepted by the institution, and then we've communicated that they've been funded. Those are 184,000. Now, there are those that we're saying NSFAS said these people qualify for funding. That is 155,000. Now, that 155,000 don't know where they are that we can fund them, because we said to them we can only make that decision once the university says yes, we've accepted you, and that yes, we've accepted you has to do with the registration data being shared with us. And I think it's very important to just be able to say there's still a large number of students who applied for NSFAS who are sitting in limbo and not really sure that they've got the funding from us or not. But when they call the call center, we tell them we are waiting for the institution to tell us if you're registered or not. So I think we want to just give you a good sense of what is happening there. And then we've got about 9,730 that probably earn more than the 350,000 threshold that is in the center set up. So we wanted, I think this is a slide that we felt was going to be very important for the committee to know. And then I'm moving over to slide 3.1. Slide 3.1, Chair, here we're just indicating that... Yeah. No problem, I think we... Okay. Maybe Chair... Yeah, I think this one is the only importance of this slide is that we are sitting at a 21 billion rand budget as NSFAS to fund students moving from 16 billion of last year. And I think it's just testament to the commitment to free education by the government of South Africa. So at the moment, we're looking at quite a large number of students being funded going forward. Chair, I think for me, I'm skipping to the slide called 4.1. It's a few slides down. It's there on the screen. It reads upfront payments to institutions. What we wanted to confirm here, Chair, is the message I mentioned earlier, to say up to this point, we have paid out to institutions an upfront of 2.6 billion to universities, and we've paid an upfront payment of 900,000 to TVET. So no institution would be able to say we did not receive our money. We have paid them. And what we've done, again, understanding the pressures relating to free education, we would normally send the second tranche of payment in April, but we paid that last week, the second tranche, just so that the liquidity of the institutions could be alleviated and then they can be able to pay administrative costs as well as the cost that relates to the other centers. Chair, what we've done then in the preceding slides is just to give you a sense that we've made great progress with regards to the 2017 closeout. The reason why we made great strides in the 2017 closeout was that we set up an office in Ekurhuleni West where we took our officials and said, be based there, let's call all institutions to come and claim their money from you. In that way, no institution will come and say, sorry, I can't claim money, I have an issue, but you're not paying me the money. So we think prove there's a student, if you prove there's a student, we can pay you. So that's what really the 2017 closeout talks to. And I think we believe that that intervention worked very well. And also, in line with what we did with the universities where we had USAF, through SACO and the department, we've got a task team where we're trying to deal with a lot of the TVET issues. We want to flag, and we've told this to the TVET branch, that the TVET remains a big issue from our side in terms of the effort required to try and address them, and also the lack of clarity around what are the rules of the bursaries going to for implementation in 2019. So that's a summary there, Chair. I think the only thing that we want to just flag out in a slide, but I'll just tell you now which one it will be. It is slide 6.1. 6.1 tells you why we're having problems with disbursement. I've spoken about it, but I just want to emphasize that for the continuing students, those who did not sign their previous loan agreement forms, it's difficult for us to make a payment to them. Those whose cell phones were lost or stolen, and we don't have updated cell phone numbers, we are not able to pay. We know that, for example, in the University of Venda, we had to pay all the allowances and found that about 300 students did not get the allowance because they had changed their cell phone numbers. So now those students will be able to say, I didn't get my money, but in real terms, we sorted that out. And I think it's also just important to flag that out. Just lastly, through yourself, there was a reference here about the standardization of allowances, which we've done. Chair, what has been happening here is, for example, if you look at slide 6.3, there would be an institution that charges a book allowance of 25,000, while another institution will charge a cost of about 3,000. So that disparity was causing a lot of problems. So in that regard, we've been able to present to the department how that can be analyzed. We said we can go for a book allowance, standardize at 5,000, and also on the travel allowance, we can standardize that. It's an annual cost, Chair. 9,000 for travel allowance, 13,000 for meals, and then we will be taking this out to the mic to get sure that this gets implemented as a way of being. Chair, we did include in here the details around our annual performance plan, and as I mentioned to you, we've taken it to the board and told them that there's a big change going through 2018-2019. And just maybe for, if you give us 3 minutes, we can just give you a high level of what this means, and then we can open up for questions. With that said, I'd like to pass on to the GM in the organization, this is responsible for financial administration, high level in terms of the APP, sir.
Thank you, Stephen, and thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Slide 8.1 just gives an overview of the situation and analysis of 2018-19, which I'm not going to go through in detail because Stephen has already covered it. Moving on to slide 8.2, it's important for us to highlight that we have made some changes to the annual performance plan in order to improve the alignment between the current business model and the annual performance plan. So there are some objectives, S4 means strategic objectives, that we have added. So we have put a new strategic objective, improve the efficiency of the application, evaluation, and funding of students. The context around this objective is because NISFAS is now doing central administration of the funding decisions. That process used to be handled at institutions, so now it's being done at NISFAS, and for that reason we felt it was important to have an objective that speaks to that. Then the another new objective, strategic objective number 5, which talks about improving service level to customers and stakeholders through monitoring customer satisfaction and taking corrective action when necessary. Again, this speaks to the need for NISFAS to be responsive to the students and to the institutions in line with the implementation of the student-centered model. Then the last 2 years, there was an objective that we had in our annual performance plan, which talked about the migration of institutions of all students from the non-pilot to the new student-centered model. This objective was achieved in the 2017, so for that reason, that objective has now been removed from the annual performance plan. Moving on to 8.3, in line with the changes that we have made to the objectives, it has also been necessary to change some of the key performance indicators. So we now have key performance indicators that measure how we perform as an entity around the receipt of applications, evaluation, and then the funding and communication of those funding decisions to students. We also had some old KPIs that spoke to the old paper-based claims from institutions, which we have now taken off from the annual performance plan. And then in line with some of the earlier comments, we had a key performance indicator around raising funding from current funders, which we have removed from the annual performance plan, as well as KPI 4.3, which spoke to payments to institutions outside the student-centered model. And then 8.4 basically summarizes all the strategic objectives of the entity, which are classified into two main goals or two main programs. The one being the internal one, which talks about efficient processes, and then the other one, which speaks to student funding. Then under the internal processes, we've got two objectives around governance and as well as around organizational culture of high performance. And then under student funding, that's where we talk about fundraising. This is for new funders. We've got a recovery, which is becoming lots of a focus going forward. And then objective number 3, that's a new objective that I've already spoken about. Objective number 4, that's around payments. Then objective number 5, that's a new objective. And then also in terms of the NISFAS Act, we do undertake research which informs policy as well as the department. And then slide 8.5, 8.6, 8.7, Chair, I'm not going to go through those in detail. Those are the individual objectives as well as the key performance indicators, the baseline, which are the targets for 2017-2018, as well as the MTF projections in 18-19, 19-20, and 20-21. Then my last comment here will be on slide
8.11, which speaks of the budget of the MDC, which is included in the annual performance plan. The budget is split into two categories, the entity's revenue. So the first line item is the administrative budget. That's the administration grants that we receive from the Department of Education and Training to fund things like rental, salaries, and other internal costs. So that budget sits around 293 million for 2018-19, up from 249 million in 17-18. Because of all the changes that has been happening, it has been critical for the organization to increase its capacity. Then in terms of the transfers received, you can see the total for the transfers from the department, other government departments, and other departmental agencies, 15.3 million in the 17-18 financial year, increasing by 47.6% to 22.8 billion in 18-19, then 33 billion the following year, and 38 billion in 2021. The last slide, Chair, is 8.12, which speaks about how the money that we are going to be receiving will be utilized. The main components of the expenditure is around compensation of employees, which is a significant investment of the entity. Around 181 million for 18-19, goods and services 103 million for 18-19, and then the transfers that we are now going to be making to universities and TVETs are 17.7 billion for 18-19 to universities, and 5.1 billion to TVETs, and then we've got a small amount of 8.6 million, as well as some accounting expenses, depreciation, and then the surplus, which mainly arises from the interest. Chair, that will be the end of the APP presentation.
I think, lastly, from our side, Chair, just in conclusion, which is not currently in your slide, we'd like to just want to request that the support that we've been getting from this committee, amongst other committees in Parliament, continues. Please be aware that we are going through a massive change, and some of our colleagues may be change fatigued, and we have increasing demands, and that's why you would have seen the strikes. And also that we remain committed in working with the department as an implementation partner of the new battery program. Reporting at provincial level is what you requested the other time. We are busy sorting out the data internally for us so that we can be able to give this committee that view, because you requested that the last time around. Also that we've also become more attractive than before in terms of our bursary scheme. You know, NSFAS last time, previously before the 16th of December, it was always the last choice of students for funding options. Now it has become one of the first choices because it's full cost of study, it's for the duration of the program, it's now a full-on free education aspect for them. So a lot of other bursaries will suffer because students will be preferring this one. Just wanted to flag that.
I will then hand over to other members to ask the questions based on all the presentations to indicate which one we are referring to. Honorable Kaole. Honorable Wenya. Honorable Sam.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to all the presenters for the information they have given us. One is going to be struggling with this document, Chair, so let's do it here and do that. The first presentation by the Department of Higher Education and Training on the registration, we have got about two questions, Chair. The first one is, can they briefly outline the issues pertaining to the allegations of corruption with regard to registration at the University of Zululand. And also at UK that if my memory serves me well, I think the department has also been conducting some investigation in respect of those allegations at UKZN, especially the medical school at UKZN. You said nothing on that. Can you tell us what's happening? You said the investors will, and there were even violent protests. While some of the issues are what you told us, but I think the bigger part of it is issues of corruption. The other issue is I would like to know what is the relation of CADGE to CAO. KZN has got CAO. You are now introducing CADGE. I think two or so years ago the minister did brief us that they were going to try and introduce a new system. So what I would like to know, when this CADGE kicks in, what is going to happen to CAO in KZN? Is CAO still operational for next year's application? This is vital information, because wherever we go, we also try to give out information to the great 12. I think that is all on the first presentation. The second presentation, Chair, showing the four keys that then to the quality that did not submit information. I think that's very inappropriate. Why did they not submit, and what are you doing to ensure that they submit? These activities, before you got to this, I already indicated here that there seems to be something I don't get with the number, with the figures. When the Mbombo has got more figures than KZN. But now I understand why. Now it's making me, you see, when you are losing time out of what is happening. So what are you doing to ensure that they also submit, so that we can get the correct interpretation of what is happening in the country? And I believe when that happens, Chair, we need to be given those revised figures. The TVET colleges, Chair, it's a pity that slide, the last slides are not there. The TVET colleges, we had that presentation by their council last year. And they complained bitterly about being underfunded. So what they are telling us now is they are moving from 54% to 50-something%, 59%, which is still not adequate. That is why, Chairperson, what happens is we have always been complaining, or rather I have always been complaining to the minister about this. That the reason, some of the reasons why our students prefer to flock to universities rather than also prioritizing TVET colleges is the way government is treating TVET colleges. Government is promoting this, and that those figures there, they prove that government is promoting this. Government is prioritizing, even with regard to funding, the universities more than the TVET colleges. And it has got to be corrected, Chairperson. The revised convention, whatever. Chairperson, I don't know, legally speaking, should we treat this as a formal presentation now that you have said it's still in the MA? So that it is not formal, it just passed.
No, it is formal in a sense. It is formal because processes are still in place. It has been referred by the department. also by Parliament to the 27th committee.
Oh,
so
okay.
The next phase would be the ratification process.
Okay. Now, thanks, Chair. Just one question. How do you hope to sort out the issue of funding? I just realize here you are acknowledging that there will be increased workload, another directorate. Now, when we have to approve, are you going to come to us with your plan together with the funding? So this is the approved funding is there for whatever new plans you are putting in place. Lastly, the MS Plus one. NS Plus, what is going to happen to those who are owing you money? I'm saying because people who fall in the same category, some of them have already paid you back, but now that there's this new thing, there are those who say, why do I bother anymore? So what is going to happen to those who have been owing money so that we also talk to issues of fairness? Those who can pay but who are still owing you. And the second one is the issue of the threshold, which is now increased to 350. Now, there are students who are already in course 2, course 3, who could not qualify because of the other threshold. Now, when they apply being in course 2, course 3, are you considering their application now that the threshold has moved to something else? And again, Chairperson, which is my last one. I don't remember where it is, but NSPAS is also doing what government is doing to TVET colleges. 5 billion to TVET colleges, 16 billion to universities. Very unfair. Very unfair. They come here, they shout at us, Chairperson. NSPAS is saying, yeah, we give them only 5 billion, 16 billion is going to. Is going to universities. The very last one, the KPIs that you have removed, are you still raising funds like you're supposed to do, not from government? Because what NSPAS is doing, Chair, they say they are fundraising when they are getting money from government, they are fundraising from government departments. What extra effort are you putting NSPAS so that your sources are not only government departments? And why are you removing that KPI that talks to fundraising from your KPI? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Give a little short, you love my son, you took my documents.
So I'm like, you know.
The time Nobab Kaula managed to come before me, and I don't like that because they always take my questions. But anyway, Chair, please tell me. Now I'm just scrambled. I just needed to find out, especially with the TVETs. I share the same sentiments, really. I feel that the Amar TVET colleges are not giving the attention they deserve, especially financially. And it really bothers me because most of our kids are there, and they are the ones who are suffering with what is going on right now. And something needs to be done very quickly. And if this continues, then our TVETs will remain to be in this situation that they are in, and our children will remain not wanting to go there, and we'll have more children who are staying at home not going to study because they don't want to go to TVET. The idea that universities are treated like they are better than TVETs really concerns me, because in other countries like Singapore, we know that TVETs are the best in terms of the quality of education they get. So we must strive to get to that level. And with what is going on right now, I don't see us getting there anytime soon. Thank you for all the presentations. I learned a lot today, especially with the Edith presentation. There's a lot that I did not know that I'm still struggling to absorb as well. But anyway, with the TVETs as well, the over-enrollment situation concerns me. Because when you look in, on the slides that we're given here, considering the fact that there are other colleges
who have not given the information, which I feel is also totally unacceptable. But that tells me that we could have had over enrollment in those colleges as well. So it concerns me that I just need to know what are the preparations you have for the next academic year, because clearly we could see that next year you will have a very serious problem in your hands. There will be a whole lot more students coming in to register, especially with the changes in regards to NSFAS. So what plans and preparations do you have to make sure that all these students will be coming that are considered as over-enrollment now that they are catered for? My worry is that the TVET colleges that we have now, for instance, the TVET college in Randfontein, it is a high school and an ex-high school that is used as a TVET college. It doesn't serve the purpose of a TVET college. They don't even have workshops in that college. So with a number of children who are coming and flocking in, they will be going there and they will be admitted, but the facilities they are using for TVET colleges will just defeat the purpose. They will not have what they need as resources to come out with the qualifications that we are looking forward to as a country. So I feel that those things have to be looked into, and plans and preparations should be put in place, and we are let know that these are the plans that we're doing for the next academic year to make sure that we recover all these over-enrollments and look into the situations and the kind of TVET colleges, like the one we went to at KZN, was it last year? It looked like a hostel more than a college, really. So what is it that's going to be done with such things and make sure that those colleges are fixed and they have the needed resources to make those children be able to study properly. Also, with the registration issues as well, the issue of the returning students who were not admitted due to outstanding fees, I just want to find out whose fault is it, why the fees were not paid, so that now these children will be kept from being readmitted because of the funds that are outstanding. And also the issue of the certification. This has been going on for years, where children do not get their certificates and diplomas. I mean, from 2006 that we had this problem. It's a backlog upon backlog upon backlog. When these children complete their studies, what are they supposed to do? Sit home and do nothing because they do not have certification and their diplomas to go and seek for employment. So I think this thing must be taken into consideration. It is quite a serious problem that needs to be taken up. And then my other concern is we keep registering these kids into TVET. We are not looking into the quality of education that these kids have. It's just quantity, making sure that those children are getting to TVET, and we increase the numbers and you come and report that, no, this we have spaces for 50,000 students, we have over-registered, but what kind of quality of graduates are we going to have when those children leave those TVET colleges? Will they be in the same level as what we have out there in terms of employment and in terms of what private companies are looking for? Because I don't think so. So let's not concentrate on having a number of children in TVET when they come out and they do not have the qualifications that would help them. Also, I think I'm done with the... and matters of charging registration or admission fees in TVET. I know for a fact that in colleges there are students who could not register because the admission fee was demanded. they had to go back home. There are some students that we were able to help and make sure that they are registered to start fees, but we could not be everywhere else in the same time. So some kids are home now because they were not registered because they did not have registration fees. If it is needed, I can go back and get you. The ones I know is more than 50. So I can go back and give you the details of those students who are at home now who were not registered because of them. And I just want to know, how are you going to prevent this from happening in the next academic year? Thank you, but that's it with the TVET. And at this convention, I just needed to find out, I don't have the document anymore, in slide 11, that you mentioned something about us having foreign students and the number of how many foreign students we have. My interest is, do we have foreign students in our TVET colleges? How many do we have? And what has been the response from their countries on the level of education that they have received from our TVET colleges? I am just, because I know universities we've got, but my interest is mainly on the TVET colleges, to measure if we measure with other TVET colleges nationally. NSFAS, my interest mainly is on the registration data that you say you're not getting timely from institutions. Because now, as you say, that you have the funds, you have students that you feel they are qualified to get the funds, but you cannot fund them because you're waiting for those for the admission report from those institutions. Isn't there a way that you could make sure that the institutions do this? What can we do as MCOP to make sure that you get those registration data information? Because that also impacts on our children. They are sitting at home, whereas there's money, and they qualify for that money, but they cannot go because the institutions are dragging their feet in giving you that the information you need. So what can we do to make sure that you get that data ASAP? Also with NSFAS, I needed to find out in regards to your... I think it's the disbursement of funds. Do you still have a case where there are funds that are given to students directly? And how has that worked for you in comparison to the funds that are given to the institutions? And do you think that should continue? Or do you think we should stop that from happening? I'm just want to know if it is working for us. Because I know that there are students who have misused the money that was given to them directly. And is that still the case? Do you think it's a good idea to give the money directly to students? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Let me welcome the presentation. Before I get to core issues, let me start with the request by Mzuzane in the Eastern Cape. They requested that you open TVET colleges. I think there were ones that were closed at some stage. Their concern is that universities from that area are very far from this. They would like to have TVET colleges around this area. There's nothing. It's a request from that area. Now, Chair, two core issues. You will pardon me. Since 2014, we are talking about TVET colleges that are underfunded. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just talking about this trip administration when I was here. Last year we said, if this is not sorted out, we're not going to support the budget. I'm recording what we said last year. Kora Mukaula will agree with me. That's what we say. It was not a talk show. We were preparing that when we come here today, take note of that. The changes that are there that is presenting is not a conscious decision that we have taken to ask the funding. Is a pronouncement by the president. As a department, we have not taken. I don't see the president in the education. Or is he sorry? As a department, from where I am sitting, you have not taken a conscious decision of what we said to you, which you also know. It doesn't have to come from us. You know yourself that you're underfunding TVET colleges. And we said to you, we're not going to support the budget if that is not corrected. You come back today, still is not corrected. Do we stick to our decision that we're not going to support the budget? Chairperson, I'm tempted to say, let's not support that budget until that matter is resolved. Otherwise, we become a talk show as a committee. They just come here, present, yeah, they made a lot of noise, let's go. Ish, Damien was making a lot of noise, they go, come back again, hey, I wonder what Damien is going to say today. Don't wait like that. If we make a decision as a committee, we must take it seriously. Must be implemented. That is why politicians were important to be in this meeting. Cannot play around about TVET College because that is where the majority of poor people are. It has to be sorted out. I don't know how we will change. But Mina, I still stick to what we said last year. We're not going to support the budget until the issue of TVET colleges is sorted out. It goes with for me. Honorable Kaula raised the issue of registration information that we have not received. That is not acceptable. I'm taking that favor. I'm asking myself, you have regional offices. You know that we're going to be meeting today. Why didn't your regional office go to those colleges? These colleges cannot provide information and get that information. It's not about you getting information, it's about what he is saying from network. I don't know if you link this in presentation. He is saying they cannot pay students if there is no proof that they're registered. You are sitting there waiting for information from colleges. You see, you're from one department. You are from one department. You are saying we cannot present information from these colleges because we did not receive information for registration. He is saying we can't pay for students if there is no proof that they are registered. My question to you, where are those students now? Are they in colleges? What are they eating? Those, I know you don't have enough space for accommodation. Where are they staying? What are they eating? It's not about figures for me. It's about people. Where is from poor families? Why do we take it this thing for life? It's not right for us because we're saying we don't people like. We know how they feel. When we say we're taking Parliament to the people, besides our conscious offices, that is where we come face to face with this reality. So you know, we have not received information from certain colleges now. I don't understand because it means to me, even if colleges had allowed them to go to class, but where they say, what they eat, that is why girls end up being involved in affairs which they had not planned. They had to eat comfort food. I know I'm from that situation. So she said, for me it's not acceptable that all the way from Pretoria kept trying to tell us that we don't have information, but we're getting paid for that. It's not acceptable. I'm sorry. It has to be like this. But as for the money for the support for the TVET, I stick with our decision. What we said to you last year is that it has to be collected. There is no other way that we can agree on that one. The next part presentation. Are you still next part?
Yes, we are. Yes, we still
so what is the minimum space part?
Let's not children financial aid to financial aid.
You're only providing further aid.
Yes, that is the aid you are providing income come to the project.
Okay, so because for me it makes a big difference. Before they were cut with salary office can be very easy now for department to send direct salary to the. That's why I'm asking this question. It's not just a simple question. It's easy to do that because now they don't have to collect the money for students. There's no loan now. Full part from government. That's why I'm asking this question. I'm linking that question with that your budget for administration is increased. You are saying because there's more demand. Help me to understand the more demand part of it. Because for me, the only connection that you don't have is for the previous loans, which I have a question on that. It can't be more demand for me unless I'm assisted. Because you're not going to do everything as you were doing with that one. You might still have to go and ask for funding outside. But the burden of collecting funds from those who owes you is going to be, at the end of the day, the profession is not going to be there. Because there is a time where you will have collected everything. What will be happening to those people, the future players, who will now not be having work to do? That is why I'm failing to understand how does your administration cost increase? How does your demand increase? If now you're not going to do part of what you were doing before, I need to be assisted on that one. But also, Chair, the your system, is it not linked to university? I think it's a weakness. You can't be working with universities with such huge number of students and your systems are not linked. For me, Chair, it was not supposed to be a question of you waiting for universities and in the process students are suffering. It was supposed to be a student giving you a student number. You punching in a system, that's why this IT. Are we going to make it with the fourth resolution if you pay for such a simple system? You put it in your system, then you know that the student is registered or not. Maybe think about that. Having a system that is linked to your messages instead of waiting for physical or human beings to tell you that information. Because at the end of the day, people who are suffering are the students, not universities, not yourself. And the number is really worrying. That number is very high. 189,000 students. I'm very, very much worried. For Chairperson, for the person who's leading the delegation, go and do something about it. You can't be waiting. And those who are from TVET colleges, get that information. Make sure that information is sent to NESFAS site. Let's just can't be sitting back and say I'm waiting for information, yet you know that the students are there and what is happening in them. The only presentation for the Addis Convention. Chairperson, I was maybe also having a question that Honorable Kaula did not pay much attention, but what I have is that I wanted to know with you. Do you know, it may not be part of this, do you have information about our students who are in foreign countries as a country now?
Because I'm asking because there are different departments who are sending students out of the country. But also with us, we were in Malaysia, Singapore, and Indonesia. We wanted to know, but looking at the good facilities they have, especially in Singapore and Malaysia, they have a very good system, a TV system, but in Malaysia University, for them, their university is not about only academic, but about building a total person at the end of the academic year. But we checked with them, do you have South African students? All of them did not have South African students. Is it us who are not proactive, or is it the policy that allows other countries not to accept students as they wish, or where is the problem? Because we would have thought that they have such nice facilities, such that we would have appreciated if our students could. It may not be part of what you are presenting, forgive me, but I think something has to be done. It can't be whoever, when I want to admit students, I can't, but you expect the next country to admit students. I think it's something that we need to change. But Chair, my emphasis, on Mpumalanga, the presentation on Mpumalanga, the protest, Mpumalanga University, I think you under the downplaying the problem. They were out of the university. I even tried to call the friends for which I gave them the number of the chaplain for a long time. They were not in France in such a way that they even invited stakeholders from the community to come and assist. They are focused on that university. I would have wanted to know if you do know the issues. If you don't, chaplain, I will get the issues and bring it to you for the department's intervention. There are serious problems there. It's not as, sometimes it's not because you may transfer money or give additional support, but when it gets down to the university, it's not like what you know. It's now become a problem at a university level, I think, which I think is a problem in our university. Thank you, Chair.
Let me hand over to the department to give
the
response. I will still aside my question, but I will make a comment.
If I could suggest that maybe the university people answer all the questions related to the university, then the TVEC, then how do we add it, and then the EFSA, before that we take them as a teacher. Thank you, Chair. So I'm handing over to the
Thank you so much. thank you very much for the question. And they are alerting us to issues and reminding us of others, and then some gaps that we think we need to fill. I think
I'll request that you be brief, or I left it only 50 minutes.
So just on the Mpumalanga, thank you for that. I think that we would be very grateful for information. I think even if there are problems at the institutional level, the more that we know about them, the more we can work out whether there's an intervention necessary. I know that the Deputy Minister was going to visit last week, but then they were closing early, so he's going to be visiting soon. Hopefully that will assist us. In terms of the question about the catch and the central application, yes, it will be continuing, and until such time as there's a phase-in. So ultimately it will be absorbed in the national catch. And there is a process around that. But for now, until CAT is operational, definitely it must continue. And in fact, it has been used as a model for developing the CAT, as you all know, because it's an important model for us. In terms of UniZululand, I just want to say we're well aware of a number of allegations. We are receiving a lot of letters about that particular university. The minister had requested the CHE to do a special audit on UniZululand, which she received. The previous minister received the report at the end of the year. The current minister is engaging with that report and has been advised and has some ideas about what to do, but is still applying her mind on exactly what intervention would follow. But we are well aware that there's not only are there things that we need to address,
at governance and management levels, but there's also a lot of concern that's been raised by the community, by people around the university. So I don't have the answer on it at the moment, but this is being addressed very seriously by the minister. In terms of UKZN, there's a case with the Hawks. So there's been a forensic investigation and there are things being uncovered, but at the moment it's still with the Hawks. I don't have a date exactly, but we are monitoring that as the department, and very seriously. In terms of, maybe just to, I can maybe cut on some of the NSFAS things to also protect my colleague at NSFAS, because many of the questions relate to policy decisions that have been made by government that they are now asking NSFAS as our entity and the institutions to implement. So some of those things are policy issues that we need to address. In particular, like the KPIs, for example, at the moment, the board has said to NSFAS, we have to prioritize getting money to the students, the real students that are on the ground. We have to prioritize the implementation of the new system. It's not to say that NSFAS won't be fundraising going forward and will give up on that responsibility, but at the moment, it's really about prioritizing that we get all the systems and policies in place. But I don't want to anticipate what Stephen's going to say, but I also want to just say that there are a lot of things that we have put in. Maybe just to clarify also, to also protect Stephen on another issue. University, it certainly is the case in the university sector, that what universities are doing is allowing students to register without making upfront payments, those that qualify for NSFAS, including the first time. A lot of universities will also allow those students to go into residences where those spaces are available. They will even, in many institutions, pay out allowances on the basis that that's why they receive the upfront payment. So it's not that, I'm not saying that there aren't students that are abandoned, there are. But I am also saying that institutions, there are many institutions where students are being supported and the risk is being taken by the institutions with the understanding and agreement with NSFAS that once the agreements are signed, then those things will be formalized. So it's very much differing across universities, but I'm not defending the fact that they are students. And I agree that it's not about the figures, it's about the people. So we are very concerned about where the students are. But I don't want to speak for the TVIS either. Just in terms of the and I think there's some very on-point comments about the systems being linked to universities. We are also very concerned. Just in terms of that 189,000 students, those are not actual registered students. Because as Stephen has indicated, we don't yet have the integration of the registration data. Those are students who qualify and who may have had admission for a place but may not in the end have been admitted. So they, again, are not your real students who are registered students awaiting their money. But we agree, we can't sit back and wait for information, and we are not doing so. But yes, there are still many challenges. I just want to see if there's anything that I'm missing. I don't want to, maybe leave the TVET funding issue to my colleagues, but I am aware that over many, many years, the department and Treasury have been engaging on the issue of TVET funding. And for many, many years. And I think even in our submission to the Hare Commission, we were very clear about the process that we had followed to do that. So we are really glad, in a sense, about the money, but obviously it's not solving the problem completely. Thank you, Chair. I hope I didn't miss anything.
David College.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to Honourable Members indicate that I also compare with Honourable Members Kabuna and Namini that as the department we did not sit back and expect, I mean we need to make sure that we are in charge of these colleges and make sure that through the regions we get them to submit whatever they are required to submit. We are taking note of that, and we were also thinking that there's going to be consequential management in terms of these colleges who did not file their information at the required time. We're still going to discuss that with the acting DDG to indicate that these are the colleges and then what action do we have to take. we issue warning letters to the principals of what is the way forward, so that they can take the department seriously in terms of whatever instruction that we issue that they need to respond to. And in terms of the issue of over-enrollment, I should think we will have to sit together as the department and look at these issues to come up with a plan for next year. As Honorable Ngwenya indicated, that this issue is going to escalate. I mean, if we don't have information from other colleges as we speak already, we are sitting with over-enrollment, there's a chance that next year this is going to double or triple this over-enrollment. And how do we deal with that? And also to note, honorable members, is that there's also constraint of space, because we've spoken about expansion of TVET infrastructure as such, I mean construction of buildings and so forth. About 13 campuses were planned, but out of those, I should think we have completed about two. So there is stagnation in terms of construction of the actual buildings to accommodate these students and so forth. But we as a department are going to look at that and see how to deal with these issues. And the issue of buildings not suitable for the purpose, which is the purpose for TVET colleges, it might happen that in some instances you find that the programs that are offered at a particular campus do not require, you know, equipment in the manner that is. For instance, I'll give you an example of office administration and so forth. But I'm not justifying the fact that we are training in high schools. Were using those buildings. But there was an undertaking by the department. There's a project which is handled by the Infrastructure Development Directorate within the department that looks at a model college. To sort of say, if we talk about a TVET college, in terms of building, in terms of programs, in terms of everything, that project is still in process to come up with a model TVET college. So that all our TVET colleges should then, you know, resemble that kind of a model TVET college. So that in South Africa, when you talk about a TVET college, what is it that you expect to find there in terms of the building, in terms of the image, in terms of the programs that are offered there, in terms of the equipment, in terms of the machinery and so forth. I will have to maybe liaise with our infrastructure development directorate to see progress that they've made in terms of coming up with that model of a TVET college. The issue of certificates and diplomas and outstanding fees, Honorable Ngwenya, it is not the fault of the students. That I should think the fault is not with the students that their results are outstanding, but it is. I should think it is with the department, and also it could be that it is with the college itself. Because for people to be certificated, I mean, there are certain components of assessment that are required. Exam is the last component, but we need what we call college-based assessment in order for us to combine the two so that we can come up with the results. But it's a matter that we are attending to. The issue of backlogs, I should think the examination chief directorate is dealing with it, where they've been reporting, I should think, to the portfolio committee and to this select committee, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of progress that they are making in terms of dealing with the outstanding diplomas with regard to LCV, where at some point they indicated that there are just a few diplomas that are outstanding in terms of the NCV program. But then with the national diploma, and then the issue is around information again. But that is taken care of in terms of there's a project that is managed and chaired by the DG. There is a meeting between the CETA and the Chief Directorate of Exams where these issues are looked into in terms of information regarding examination, so that at the end of the day we are able to certify and issue these diplomas. But I will have to refer this back to the Chief Directorate of Exams for maybe a comprehensive and detailed and more, comprehensible information in terms of progress that they are making around this. Honourable Bonya, I agree with you that we should not be chasing numbers in our TVET colleges, but we should also be concerned about the quality of education and training that we offer there, and that we are also going to look into. It's something that we are noting, and we'll have to look into it, how do we make sure. And also maybe work with the quality councils that are there, because they are responsible for quality issues, to see how can we work with them in terms of making sure that whatever our TVET colleges offered is of high quality. And we are able to vouch for as the department and as quality councils.
In conclusion,
I'm going to say that the issue of Imbizana, I'm noting it, and I'm going to raise it with the within the branch to see what could be done, and also with the infrastructure development directorate. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just very quickly address the Alice questions, but if I may just refer to what Dr. Buthelezi referred to at the end. We recognise that part of the issue around certification, certainly a large part in the TVET system, has to do with the quality assurance system, which is the SACWA and the quality councils that should be taking note and acting in a far more focused way, because at the end of the day, the NGO requires Umalusi and the QCTO to be the certification body. The minister has, however, raised this issue and signed her ministerial guidelines to SACWA and the QCs to address this issue very urgently. So picking up with what Dr. Buthelezi is saying, recognizing that there are other role players who have the ultimate responsibility, and this will be addressed, and a report will be forthcoming together with the TVET. In terms of the ADIS issues, the question, I'm just looking for it over here. In terms of foreign students, do we have foreign students in the TVET system? I do not have that information at hand right now. I know that we have large numbers of university students. I will find out when I get back from Mr. Jeffy. He would have, I think he had to go to another meeting. And I will get exact figures whether we have. My sense is we do not have a lot of them, because our directorate deals with a lot of the issues of the Department of Home Affairs requesting foreign visas, and the issue of are the institutions accredited and are the qualifications registered before they will give a visa to a foreign student. The vast majority are universities, but there are some students coming into the TVET system, particularly in certain of the scarce trade areas. And I will give exact figures, if I may, in a written response to that. In terms of the Malaysia, the Singapore's, those institutional types of the TVET systems and what they offer, I fully agree that they have really got a very different and a very good system. In terms of the way the current bilaterals work with the countries, we are guided by where the requests come from those countries to have our students placed. So, for example, Hungary, China, Russia, those countries where the bilateral agreements come and students are then placed there. I know that in the Malaysian situation, SACWA is currently dealing with the Malaysian situation, and it boils down to recognition of our qualifications in Malaysia. So I will also provide a fuller report to this committee around that issue. But there are quite a few of our students who have applied to go to Malaysia
and they haven't been able to go because of the qualification issue that hasn't been sufficiently resolved. Just looking for my other question, I have it here.
The funding.
We do not yet have a full sense of what the scale of the work will be. We can currently manage all of what we have to do. I expect once we have ratified and we have agreed as a country what our involvement will be. There are a number of areas and we may only agree to some of them. Then we will be able to have a clearer idea. Thank you, Chair.
That's what I know that you're able to repeat the minutes.
Well, definitely use the 2 minutes wisely. On Honourable Dlamini Swakulus, thank you for the question around the integration. We've kicked off the project of integration this year because that we saw was a big issue, the exchange of data. We've integrated very well with the Department of Home Affairs, integrated with SASA and the rest of the others. We're just now trying to integrate with this one. So it's a priority this year, but what we want to just flag with you, it's a pain for institutions because they're never used to share registration data real time. So we're working with that. The role of NSS going forward, maybe I would be very defensive in the way that I would approach this question because I think you raise a very valid point. The central admission of administration of the funding was always based on the fact that universities prioritize other things with the money that was given to them and stress the wallet widely and therefore the students were never the beneficiaries. That is why a central administration process through NSFAS worked. And that's where it's going to work going forward because then we can apportion based on the students and cost to the students as opposed to try and stretch it widely. I suppose it is on those bases that the pronouncement said the administration of the bursary scheme should be answered. I suppose it's one of those questions that we need to be able to be very answerable to. The work we do on the recovery side is really nothing. It's really not a big cost on our side. It was never a big focus of our business. We have about 3 or 4 people, and then we've got external people helping us with that. So the large number of people are students, etc. But I think we'll take that to you, and maybe apply my strategy first on that. And on paying funds directly, experience on how has that been, and all of that. We believe, and also the misuse of funds. This is one question we get all the time, and we as NSFAS are in a position to ask ourselves, shouldn't we trust the students a lot more when they're in second, third year, and then maybe try and control the way we distribute the funds in first year? It remains a big question. I think we will be able to answer that going forward. Receiving registration data from institution, what can the NCOP do? And also the Telecom, can we write that down to you and send it through? Because we did not think about how you can assist that. And for you to be specific, it helped us a great deal in that regard. So we'll be able to do that. Are you still raising funds? I think my colleague Tandy spoke to us about that, that we may not necessarily need the funds. Then it needs us to think different. One of the thoughts we've got is how do we get South Africans who want to contribute to education to donate? So I've been thinking about the creative ways in that regard. I think the rest of the other questions, which I think is important, that so Honourable Kaolo Kloma asked is around the threshold for continuing students. Please, it's important for this committee to understand the two-pronged strategy that is currently in play. For the continuing students who are second, third year that are NSFAS funded, they are still under the 122,000 threshold. So which means if you only even those that are continuing that are second year or third year, we'll still judge them on whether they earn 122. Because the policy is only applicable to first time entrants, which are students that enter the higher education system in 2018 for the first time. And those are the ones that qualify for 350,000. The benefit to those that are still measured on 122 is that whatever they owed before is going to be converted into a full-on bursary, therefore they've got no, they owe nothing. And then there was also a further question on Kaula around, Honorable Kaula around historic debt and NSFAS debt as well as old NSFAS debt. We are continuing to recover the money from all people who benefited from NSFAS. This is the money that always tops up the amount that we've got to be able to fund more students. So we haven't changed that. Until the government tells us otherwise, we will change that. The second one is NSFAS debt for those students that are continuing gets written off. But also what the department is committed to do is that all students who have debt that were related to NSFAS or shortfall of funding, the department said we will find ways to pay that debt, and therefore no student should be stopped from registering on the basis of debt. So that has helped a lot of students to be able to register. So I think those are the pertinent questions that we had.
It was quite a long meeting. Nonetheless, I do wish to thank you. The meeting followed the remarks very quickly. The issue of policies that are outstanding by the department, policy on student housing, transport allowances, meal allowances, textbook allowances are policies that need to be finalized presently, because that is the source of most of the content in the universities and civil colleges. The policy on academic and technical requirements for all courses and on module books are offered. Those policies need to be finalized. The placement issue, after we invested through a bursary to students, what do you benefit in terms of the service that is given to community? The students are being down to a specific number of years to service the department before they can move to the private sector. It's very policy on that one. The issue of artist convention, ma'am, I think it is going to resolve a lot of problems. We have had doctors and other professionals that study outside, but when they come back to the country, their qualifications are not recognized. I think that problem is going to be resolved once and for all. For instance, in Limpopo, there are doctors in the UK, and when they came back, their qualifications were not recognized. Before you finalize the TVET model, please do go to Singapore. The department must make an effort to send officials to Singapore to go and have a look at the model of a TVET college, specifically of a TVET college, specifically in the country. You'll come back with very wonderful ideas. The KZN TVET colleges that did not submit information, can you please give us the actual name? We are public representatives, so we need to phone and find out why is it that they failed to submit the information. And I want to agree with Honorable Jamin and other members about our concerns of the underfunding of the TVET sector. It's an issue that has been raising over and over again, but it doesn't seem to be getting the attention of the department. And I don't know, I am tempted to say that maybe we shall have to take nothing measures in terms of the budget approval process regarding this issue. As a country, we are saying that skills are required at this moment in time for economic transformation, but we are not investing in that area. It is a disjuncture that we need to look into. Over a registration in the different colleges, they've over registered by 7,000. Who is picking the cap in that regard? Who is going to take care of that kind of expenses given themselves? Are you fundraising? What are you doing about that issue? That is the conclusion of my remarks that I am making rushingly. But I do wish to thank the department for letting coming over. We are going to have an opportunity to address the issue when we present to APP. There is still an opportunity to relate and engage on other specific issues. I do want to say thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
We all fine. This one is your internal.
It's my internal.
So when that's how we were looking at the numbers, we didn't see the numbers there. Yeah.
Turnover. Correct.
I hope not.